Today, public debt globally is reaching 100% of GDP. What does it mean for countries with high debt level? They fall in a debt trap. They cannot generate enough growth to bring down debt levels, and these debt levels hold them back. And that is very real for many of these countries. The second risk I see on the horizon is good news for some turning into bad news for others. If an accelerated recovery, for example, in the United States, pushes up interest rates, and we actually have seen a glimpse of that just this last month, in the last weeks, then the fate of these countries in terms of debt burden is going to be incredibly difficult.
Welcome to this podcast produced by the International Monetary Fund. Today we hear part of a discussion about debt and the very real danger for some countries of falling into a debt trap. The seminar was held during the IMF World Bank spring meetings and featured, along with IMF Managing Director Kristalina Georgieva, Mohamed El Aryan, President of Queen's College, Cambridge, and Chief Economic Advisor at Allianz, Vera Songway, Under Secretary General of the United Nations and Executive Secretary of the Economic Commission for Africa. And the panel was moderated by Martin Wolf, Chief Economics Commentator at the Financial Times. Go to imf.org to watch the webcast of the entire event, but we start here with Vera Songway on what rising debt levels mean for countries in Africa.
Yes, there is, I think, a huge risk of a debt trap. In 2010, we had a debt to GDP levels on the continent of about 42%. They actually improved in 2015 to 33%. Today, we're at 65%. So clearly, I think if anybody wants to think about the numbers, and are we really, the IMF normally thinks of debt to GDP at 60% as having hit the limit. We're at 65 continentally from North Africa all the way down to Southern Africa. But something has changed, and I think that's what Mohamed was talking about, is essentially the composition of the debt. In 2000, we had sort of 80-20. 80% of the debt was mostly concessional multilateral debt, 20% bilateral and some private. Today we have 30-30-40. So 40% private sector debt on the continent. And this debt has been useful because for some economies it has helped them grow and grow much faster than others. 30% bilateral debt with a few new big entrants coming into the market like China and Saudi Arabia taking that space. And then 28% on the concessional side. So as we begin to talk about debt restructuring, we must have a framework that brings everybody together. The DSSI, the Debt Service Suspension Initiative, has been great. It's given the continent $5 billion. That's the only liquidity that we've been able to get in addition to the huge amounts of resources that we've gotten from the multilateral sector and primarily the IMF, the World Bank, and the African Development Bank. But that has not been nearly enough. And one of the big issues around the DSSI was we lacked private sector participation. And so we do need to find some way of seeing how we get private sector participation to the table. Otherwise, I think there's going to be a long debt trap. Because as we have seen with many countries who have, you know, announced, yes, I want to do some restructuring, the minute they fear that they would lose market access, they close back. Mm-hmm. But I think I have talked a lot about the numbers. We talk about the, you know, 65% debt to GDP, 40% in the private sector hands. But we do have 170 million people that are going to fall into poverty. And I think that is the conversation. It's not so much of a debt trap. It's a poverty trap or a doubling down of the poverty trap. And in Africa in particular, when you fall into poverty, you fall much further down and you stay much longer. Another thing about this crisis is vulnerability. Who is more vulnerable? Mohamed talked about tourism and Kristalina as well. Tourism is hitting Seychelles. Tourism is hitting Morocco. So there's a group of vulnerable middle-income countries that are actually the engines of growth for some of the low-income countries on the continent. And if we cannot support those vulnerable middle-income countries, it will also be, I think they, you have large poverty, a debt trap that you cannot get out of a la Argentina, I think, which is going to make at least the African continent a lot more difficult. So the SDRs, great idea. We hope also that we will get some on lending so that we can continue to help the poorest, but also that the middle income countries get access to some liquidity and markets can reopen for them as well. Thank you.
So let's move on now. having laid out quite a disturbing picture, it has to be said, given the obvious problems of growth and the difficulty in that situation of doing anything that doesn't avoid some sort of debt restructuring and the difficulty of doing that. So let's focus on that. So let me start with you, if I might ask, Vera. Given where the countries you're particularly concerned with are now, and given the likely developments, and put to one side the obvious urgency, which I've written a lot about, of accelerating the vaccination program, making it a genuinely global program, put that aside for the moment, what would you like to see happen now to make this problem more manageable? What has to be done in terms of pulling everybody together into the discussion, making preemptive changes, which will really allow the world to avoid the sort of nightmarish debt traps you've outlined, particularly in low-income countries? So what has to be done, and by whom, and now?
I think three things. Thank you very much. And I'm glad that growth is the answer there. People do want to work, and we do need a productive economy. But the first thing we really need to do is liquidity. I think Mohammed started by saying, let me learn from the past or the Argentina crisis. What happened in this crisis is that the developed world, the advanced economies, learned from the past. And within the first 3 months of the crisis, $7 trillion of liquidity was put into the economies to just ensure that we do not fall. That sense of urgency has not been demonstrated in the emerging economies. And so the more we wait, as Kristalina said, the less revenue, the lower the GDP, the higher the debt. And so we're creating this debt trap. So liquidity now, I think at this meetings, we're going to be announcing the SDRs. I hope we're not just announcing them. I hope we are releasing them. We can't wait for another 4 months before they are released. We need them yesterday. So that's the first thing, is we have new liquidity, release it immediately according to the quarters. Then we can talk about the on lending. I think the second thing that we need to do is better transparency. It's going to be very difficult to work on resolving the debt problem if we do not understand who has what debt where. Yes, I gave the 30-30-40 number, but when you start unpacking it, it becomes very difficult, particularly in the bilateral space, to just understand what bilateral is really concessional and what bilateral is private. So we do need to understand that so that more countries can have access to the different frameworks, either the DSSI, the Debt Service Suspension Initiative, or go to the common framework and begin a quick and speedy debt resolution. We've seen that Ecuador did it, and it's doing it well. And finally, the third thing that needs to happen is that the markets, the private sector, needs to come to the table. We have seen Benin, Cote d'Ivoire, Ghana go to the markets. But have they gone to the markets at the right cost? You know, it's one thing to have access to liquidity today, but then to unravel in a few more months. So we must look at the global architecture and see when you have lower for longer interest rates. And yes, they may be inching up, but compared to 7.5% of Ghana last week, I think that we can still do better in reducing some of the cost of market access. And finally, multilateral development institutions need to be recapitalized, but also to lend, not resubstitute resources, but lend new resources quickly, particularly to the low-income countries.
Well, that's a very interesting program. Let me turn to you, Mohammed, before I ask Kristalina how she's going to fix all this. I think you talked about the free-riding problem, which is obvious. There are two potentially important free-riders, and since you're not running a major institution, you can be frank about both of them. The first, of course, is the private sector. I have to say that, to me, having watched this story for half a century, the scale of the increase in private sector debt to some very vulnerable African countries strikes me as pretty irresponsible, though I understand why they took it. But is it possible to bring them into this discussion? Because this has become increasingly difficult the more diverse the number of private sector creditors has become. It was much easier, though it was very hard when it was, 15 major banks. Now it's vastly more diverse in the private sector. And then there's a new official creditor, an enormous superpower, China. We can't just pretend it isn't there. And so all of these institutions have to be brought together with the IFIs and the established official creditors in an organized way. It's a completely new architectural problem. Can we get our arms around this in the sort of time period we're talking about?
Martin, that is the key issue. And we have to do all we can to get our arms around this quickly. Why? In the short term, you will channel official resources to private creditors and to some extent to Chinese entities who are not participating in burden sharing. And that would be really ironic that by standing back and not doing your part to solve this collective challenge, you end up being rewarded. And I worry about the SDR allocation ending up in that way in certain countries. So that's the immediate problem. The longer term problem is that if we're not careful, we're going to stumble towards a multiplying paradigm of non-payments. And what happens in non-payments in this environment, where a lot of non-specialized creditors have lent to emerging markets, is that contagion risk goes up. So yes, we have to get our arms around it. Now, growth, I want to stress, is key, absolutely key to this whole process. But this is a panel about debt. So let me focus on the debt. What are we trying to solve for? We're trying to solve first and foremost for better alignment of incentives between debtors and creditors, between official and private creditors, within the official creditors, Paris Club, China, and other non-Paris Club, and then within the private sector. So there's a whole host of alignments that need to be made so that it's an incentive compatible system. Second, we have to embed this in the structure, because if you don't do that, the incentive will be simply to run out the clock. Third, transparency is key. We're starting to have a better understanding of the challenges. The academic side has done some really good work on the China issue, and we're learning a lot from that. But greater transparency is really important. And how do we achieve all this? And that's where I'm going to end, is by converging existing bottom-up with existing top-down to create a better architecture. Existing bottom-up is the debt service suspension initiative that Kristalina mentioned, that needs to be extended in time and expanded in coverage. And it needs to be supported by much greater data sharing. And then from the top down is taking the common framework, which is well-designed, is simply the extrapolation from a Paris Club process that has worked well, and making it operational in a sense where the private sector feels that it is part of it, it can influence outcomes as long as it is part of that outcome. And part of that will require using a stick. The carrot, in my opinion, but that's open to discussion, the carrot will not be enough to overcome the coordination problems within the private sector for the reason you've cited, that we will need to impose more of a stick in the system. Let me end up by saying there is a bit of complacency right now. Yes, we have avoided multiple debt crises since the pandemic hit. In fact, the major restructurings really have been to do with pre-existing conditions. One reason is because we flooded the system with liquidity that in fact made the debt problem worse. But let's also remember two lessons from the 2008 debt crisis, the global financial crisis. One is that the IMF support peaked in 2011, not 2009, not 2010. These things take time. They often are in the shadow, the problems, and then they erupt. And by the time they erupt, it's much harder to solve. The second lesson, I keep on repeating this, and you've heard me say it, Martin, let's not think we can win a war and again lose the peace. This is a golden opportunity to make more sustainable and fairer lots of things. And the debt, the international debt architecture is a critical component of that. Thank you.
These are very, very important points, Wavira. So this is for you, Kristalina. Let's step back just for a second. As you know very well, almost 20 years ago, the then Deputy Managing Director of the IMF, Anne Kruger, put forward the idea of a sovereign debt restructuring mechanism, which was not accepted at that time. Great pity. We supported it very strongly. But it seems to me something on this line, something quite fundamental needs to be considered. It's inescapable. And maybe now is the opportunity. You've got obviously a different constellation of political forces right now in the world. I can say this. The US is obviously acting in a very different way. You have a shared problem, which I think everybody in the world recognizes, which is a very high priority. I mean, morally and in every other way, in avoiding the sort of nightmare we've been talking about. We have an extraordinarily more complex set of creditors and instruments, which really can only be dealt with through a global mechanism of some kind. Mm. Is it now the time to really push hard for something quite fundamentally transformative at the institutional level? And if we don't do that, we are just not going to be able to handle this. And what should that look like?
Well, I listened very carefully to Vera and to Mohammed, and I agree virtually point by point with what they have said. It is regrettable that when the world was simpler and the debt problems were involving a smaller cast of characters, the then deputy managing director of the IMF was not able to push through what could have been a fundamentally different approach to debt resolution. What we see today is three big problems. One, both Vera and Mohammed talked about transparency. And there I feel very strongly that my institution has a responsibility to press very hard and together with others, with the World Bank and others, to make it so that this mountain of debt that is often hidden from the naked eye can be exposed, that contracts are disclosed, and the conditions in this contract, sometimes ridiculous, are for everybody to see. On that, I have a bit more hope that the situation now is becoming difficult to a point that countries that have been resisting transparency, and actually on both sides, are more open. This is a fundamental component. If we don't know what we're talking about, we can't fix it. Two, we have gotten last year, because of the crisis, a new momentum for creditors to come together. Crisis is an opportunity, and that was the case in 2020. The common framework that Mohammed talked about is actually our first real chance to bring the cast of characters, all the creditors. And my determination is that we make it stick. We have three countries that have asked for a treatment under the common framework: Chad, Ethiopia, and Zambia. If we don't move, and actually on Chad, we are, Vera, you may have heard that, we expect the creditor committee to be formed within the next week. We have to demonstrate that we can get all the participants, traditional creditors, the new creditors, and it's not just China. We have China, we have India, we have Saudi Arabia, we have Turkey. They need to be in different countries, in different compositions. They need to be brought in. And we have private sector. And if we are able to make it so that these are precedents of serious engagement where we use a bit of pressure to make sure that things are done, then obviously the common framework would just fiddle away without consequences. We cannot afford that. And then comes the third and very important component. And it is how we get the capacity of improvements in the international debt architecture be supported by those without whom we cannot move. There is no way we can move without the big creditors, whether it's China or it is the private sector. If we don't bring them in, it is very hard to have anything sustainable. And there my take is the following. It is for countries to believe that they're better off because they called for early for debt treatment. And I am looking at Vera. We need to get countries to have the guts to step up early, because the earlier we act on debt restructuring or debt reprofiling, the better chance we have that the country would return to sustainable growth. And finally, there are many elements. I mean, just to be fair, there have been good things done, like collective action clauses. This is a good thing. But there is so much more we can improve. And Mohammed, I may be slightly on a different page than you. I think there are many elements of qualitative improvement in the international debt architecture that we have to pursue. The DSSI, Debt Service Suspension Initiative, showed something very interesting. You can have in a contract a clause that says if a country is hit by a natural disaster, automatically it stops debt service for a period of time. We have to work on all these different parts. And the one thing we cannot afford is what Mohammed rightly pointed to, and it is complacency. We cannot afford it, because if we are not moving on all these fronts and bringing attention and participation in a way that makes a difference for countries, so countries then are committed to move with us, then we are risking to have a very unfortunate repetition of what history already told us happens when countries fall in a debt trap.
That was IMF Managing Director Kristalina Georgieva in a panel discussion about debt during the IMF World Bank spring meetings. She was joined by Mohammed El-Aryan, President of Queen's College, Cambridge, and Vera Songway, Under Secretary General of the United Nations. The panel was moderated by Martin Wolf, Chief Economics Commentator at the Financial Times. Go to imf.org to see the webcast of this event and other seminars that took place over the course of the spring meetings. I'm Bruce Edwards. Thanks for listening.